Hos 3F får du nu de første 2 måneders fagforening for 0 kroner, når du melder dig ind. Så er du sikret personlig rådgivning og støtte hele dit arbejdsliv. Meld dig ind i din lokale afdeling eller på 3F.dk. Velkommen i 3F.
Det er tid til at gå bag om facaden. Yeah! Velkommen til Behind the Vinyl med Darren Edwards og Niklas Müller. My Rock.
And we're back, Behind the Vinyl, another episode. I've got Niklas over here, and yep, we're joined from Jake today.
Hello. Syra.
Welcome aboard, man.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Nice to have you here. Definitely nice to have you here. And it was your choice. We threw it over to you to choose a record.
Yeah, I chose Pink first, but you didn't know what that was.
Hey, I know Pink is. I will happily do the Pink thing with you. So what did you choose?
I chose Iron Maiden, Power Slave.
Uh-huh. Mm. Lovely, a record. We're kind of, I think Nick and I emailed as soon as you told me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nick and I emailed and Nick was straight back. Fucking A.
Yeah.
That was like for sure.
Absolutely.
Let's twist this around. We're going to start the show and we'll play the first single in the opening track, Aces High, and then we'll come straight back after this and talk all about it. Yeah. Aces High, first song from the album. What an amazing way to start an album.
I remember I bought a, I was on a holiday with my parents in Germany, which must have been 1985 or something. I remember buying like a big ass poster of I think it's the single, the cover of the single, the artwork
in the cockpit, like the
exactly. Yeah. I bought that on a big ass poster, which I had on my wall later on. That's a that's an early memory of Power Slave.
For me, Maiden came in later in my life. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, I'm born 82, so I started to
2 years old when this
I was two exactly but when I was 4 years old I started to listen to Halloween, and other bands came along, and I didn't put much attention to Maiden until like in the 90s, like when I was probably like 8 years old or something like that. But this was the first album that caught my eye with Maiden, because when I saw it in like a record store, it was like a one of these things where you buy like used vinyls.
Yeah.
I just saw the cover and I was blown away. I thought it was the coolest cover that I've ever saw, and so I bought it for my like allowance money.
Very cool. And it is an amazing cover.
It is. I think like that was the first one. I mean, all the covers that Derek Riggs did for Maiden are pretty amazing. But this was the first one, I think, that was really detailed.
Yeah.
Even though, I mean, Number of the Beast is as well, and Peace of Mind and so on. But this one had tiny details. And you kind of sat there with the album cover and you were looking at it, trying to find all the things in it. And looking at it and all that.
And I think Derek Riggs, the artist, he probably matured with the band.
Yes,
absolutely.
From this stage to what he did with the original Iron Maiden cover.
Yeah.
And then he went on after this and did Live After Death.
Somewhere in Time.
And that's where Somewhere in Time was probably the most detailed album.
With a bunch of stuff that has to do with Iron Maiden, like lyric wise and stuff like that.
Symbol wise, and there's a symbol from this album in Somewhere in Time.
Yeah,
you know, there's a little chunk of this album, like the one of the eyes. You know,
exactly.
The,
yeah.
So it's pretty crazy. I can't remember, when did Derek Riggs stop working with the band?
Oh, I don't know, but that would. There was some, wasn't on a bad note? Something happened between Maiden and Riggs, didn't it? Or
I think it was, yeah.
I think that's the that's one of the things that happened, that they had a falling out or something like that. I don't know what it was.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that's another thing that I've read, like, it's kind of like, it's like a meme, I think, where it says like, well, I didn't learn about history in school, I learned all my history from Iron Maiden albums. And it's kind of true. That, I mean, just with that cover and Power Slave and Egypt and all that, it kind of got you interested as a kid.
Absolutely.
And you read the lyrics and, you know, you got some of it and you learned a bit.
It's a little bit like what Sabaton is for a lot of kids now.
Oh, yeah, with
these days.
Stuff,
that
very true, actually. Yeah, yeah.
It is.
And I learned a lot from Maiden and you know, digging into, like, the encyclopedias.
Oh, yeah.
Then, like, okay, what are you singing about? Like, oh, this pharaoh, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Different lyrics, not like when you kind of register what the Kiss and Gimme More when Paul sings Lick My Candy Cane.
Slightly different.
I was a kid, I knew what candy was, and that was about it.
We got this ongoing thing, Jake, where there's a few things that Nicholas has got wrong.
Oh yeah,
okay.
Like, oh, yeah. Giving the dog a bone.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That took a while.
He didn't quite get that one.
No, yeah. Not that one. And I asked my mother, also a Kiss song, "Keep Me Coming." She was kind of wondering what I was listening to, since she was an English teacher, and she got it, but I didn't. But yeah, no. But Maiden, really, I think with this one also, they really stepped it up when it came to a stage show and things like that as well.
Yeah,
massive show. I think they really. I mean, wasn't this the album that also kind of broke them big in America?
Absolutely.
Major tour.
Major tour, 28 major countries.
Major
11
arenas.
11 months on the road.
Yeah.
I read up a little bit here, and it says that the rigs stopped working on Fear of the Dark.
Oh, right. Okay.
You know what? When you say that, you can see a difference. You can, thinking about
it. Oh, sure. Yeah.
Definitely in Brave New World.
Yeah.
And definitely an X Factor.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And, absolutely.
Is that what it was called?
But he continued to work with Bruce, though, on his solo album.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah. Accident of Birth.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
I can't remember the cover.
Oh, is that with the Joker kind of thing? Is that the one?
Maybe.
Red?
Yeah.
With
I know, like the...
No, not a Joker. Jester.
Jester,
something like that. Okay, yeah,
interesting. He also made the cover for Gamma Ray's Power Plant, which is a wholly digital one, which is really, really crappy.
Oh, okay.
It's using a computer, you know, like 20 years ago. Mm. It doesn't look that good.
Okay.
He's been doing other things than Maiden too. But he's a phenomenal artist. Everything that he made in the 80s is just pure gold. And what you guys were talking about before with all the details makes me think that the original drawing of the actual cover must be pretty big.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Because of the details.
It's made by hand, not in a computer. You cannot, you know, like squeeze down all those small things unless you paint it pretty big.
True.
However, saying that, I have read where Derek Riggs, it wasn't always a sweet reunion or a sweet working relationship with Derek Riggs and Rod Smallwood, the manager, because he would often call and want the artwork tomorrow, if I understand correctly. And there's stories of Derek Riggs being in a taxi, you know, holding. I think that was Number of the Beast, right?
Oh, okay. Might have been.
He had the artwork, just finished it in the taxi, even put the window down to get a bit of wind on.
Oh, I kind of remember that. Yeah.
To try to dry it a little bit quicker. So it must have been sizable enough to get into a taxi.
Yeah, exactly.
But I understand what you're saying, and I would think that's true.
I think I actually emailed Derek Riggs about a year ago or something, trying to get an interview, and all I got was a reply that he doesn't do interviews anymore.
Yeah, Jake, he might email you direct.
Yeah. I mean, like, I'm meeting up Derek after this interview.
Yeah.
Det her er Behind the Vinyl på My Rock.
It was your entry point into
Maiden. It was. I probably heard, you know, a couple of songs before. I probably heard like Number of the Beast and so on, been played, but you know, I didn't really notice them.
Yeah.
But this album was what, you know, caught my eye for Maiden, and you know, made me curious about all the other stuff that they did. And funny enough, the next album I bought was Killers, which for me then, I you know, there was no internet back then. You just bought another album.
Yeah.
And so it sounded really strange. And I was like, well, this is not what I, you know, I thought it was going to be as good as Power Slave.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I read up on things and okay.
Yeah, basically two different bands.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Completely.
I remember that as well, because my first album was Number of the Beast when it came out, 1982. And I remember later on, a friend of mine bought Killers or maybe the first album, I can't remember. And I remember back then thinking that I didn't like it because it didn't sound like Number of the Beast. And I love Number of the Beast. It's probably still my favorite Maiden album.
Yeah.
But it was so different. And back then, it took a while. until you realize that it was a different singer and all that. So,
But I have another story like that, real short. In 91, my uncles, which got me into heavy metal, they told me I had to buy the new Metallica album. And I didn't have any Metallica album, but I went to the record store and I bought what I thought was the new album. And I listened to it a lot and I loved it. And I spoke to my uncles like the weekend after. And I'm like, yeah, I love this song and I love that song. And yeah, but that's from the first album. Yeah. So I went away and bought Kill 'Em All.
Right.
All right.
Well, that's good. Love that's it. A
that's
good
great.
Start.
Yeah. That's really cool.
Could do worse.
So let's go a little bit in. When did you start singing?
5 minutes ago? No. No, I started to sing when I think I was like 18 or something like that.
Oh, relatively late.
Relatively late. I was putting all my effort into becoming a professional hockey player. Right. But I injured myself and I had to do something else. So I was thinking, what else can I do that is not a real job? So I figured rock star would be the obvious choice. So I met up with a friend of mine back then that he played guitar, and he said that they were searching for a singer in his band. And I lied and I said that, yeah, I'm awesome. I've been singing for ages. I hadn't been singing much more than in the, choir in school.
Right.
And that was only to, skip classes.
Yeah.
So I didn't really know how to sing. But luckily for me, I was the band was equally bad as me. So they thought that I rocked. I really, really loved it. So I started to practice, and I think I released my first album 4 years later or something like that, three or four years later.
Right.
So it went pretty fast after I first started singing.
Okay.
But my biggest inspiration back then was Mikael Kiske, from Halloween. So I was practicing like 4 or 5 hours a day, trying to, be able to sound, hit the notes that he took.
Right.
I was never that amazed by Bruce Dickinson at that time, because I was more into Rob Halford.
Right.
So I was still listening a lot to Maiden.
Right, yeah. Yeah, they have very different voices, Halford and, everyone has different voices, of course, but just their style of singing, Halford's compared to Dickinson's.
But what I liked with Dickinson or with Halford was how he could go from like the belted voice without any like scarves in his voice up to like the high pitch screams, right, like this crystal clear thing. Yeah. So I was practicing a lot on those things, and that amazed me. For some reason, I always loved Bruce Dickinson's voice, but it was nothing in his voice that, made me want to sing like him.
Right, yes.
Because he had this rasp I did not want to have. So I did that on purpose. I never really practicing anything
Dickinson
style. No.
Yeah. Right.
Just to go off tangent here a little bit. 4 years old, listen to Halloween. Your vocal inspiration, and you're wearing a Halloween shirt.
Yeah.
Halloween crew shirt.
Yeah, a crew shirt. Yeah, I got it from the band.
Yeah, which is quite, it's basically full circle.
Yeah, it is a full circle. The last show I did with my former band, Amaranth, I made sure to have that last show, and I did it in Tokyo actually.
Oh,
opening up for Halloween.
Oh,
so
that's pretty cool.
It was even like this. My last show was supposed to be another date, but Danny, the drummer in Halloween, he got infected spleen.
Oh,
so they had to delay the tour. So at that point in time, I was actually already out from the band, but I told the band that I'm not leaving the band until I play with Halloween. That's
love it. That's great.
So that's a full circle, really.
That really is.
That's
cool. Let's play another song before we let it go too much. We'll be right back.
But the thing was also that on November 2nd, 1984, Maiden played Stockholm. And November 3rd, they played Gothenburg on this tour, 1984, with Motley Crue opening. Okay. A tour I should have seen, but didn't.
I didn't really have nice the package. Age.
Yeah. So that's two and a half months after the album's out. That's pretty quick to be over here. Yeah.
And it's amazing that this tour was a year long.
Exactly. Yeah. 28 countries. First time to Australia, where I was.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Yeah, I didn't get to go.
No.
My brother nearly went to this show.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah, he got to go. He got to choose between this or Twisted Sister.
Oh, it's that story.
Yeah, it's that story. Yeah. And he chose Twisted Sister. And he bought me a girl shirt.
My dad always said to me, because Twisted Sister was a band that I played a lot when I was young, right. But my dad always said Twisted Sisters.
Yeah, of course. That, you read that everywhere, Twisted Sisters.
Actually, funnily, that's what I was into more. Twisted Sister, AC/DC, Motley Crue. This was, although I can remember having, I can't remember having the first two Maiden records, but I can remember having Number of the Beast and Peace of Mind.
Yeah.
And I can remember Number of the Beast I liked. Peace of Mind, back then I didn't really. It was different.
Right, yeah.
There was something different about
it. Yeah. I remember really loving Die With Your Boots On.
Oh, really? Okay.
Killer song, I think. But
I never felt that because I didn't get the lyrics.
Right.
Because I was too young to understand what it meant.
Yeah. I think I these days I really love Power Slave, but I think back then I loved Number of the Beast, I loved Peace of Mind, and then when Power Slave came, I don't know, there's some really good songs on there, and then you have that 14-minute long song, Rime of the Ancient Mariner,
yep,
and I had no idea what that meant. And it just went on forever and ever and ever.
Yeah.
I think that was like the first song I ever heard that was that long.
That long. Okay.
Yeah.
You yet to discover Dream Theater.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. No, but that was something I think that it tended to be a song that I think I had the album on tape. And since that was the last song on the album, I tended to skip that song because it was just too long
for some reason.
And I remember also after Power Slave, even though it being like a major album for Iron Maiden, I still liked Maiden, but it kind of faded a bit after that when it came to Somewhere in Time and all that. Because I was by then more into, as you mentioned, Motley Crue and Sunset Strip and all that.
Yeah.
It meant a lot more to me.
See, I stepped off the... I really enjoyed... This was my entry really into it.
Yeah.
And then Live After Death.
Right.
Totally submerged in that.
Yeah.
I thought that was great.
Yeah.
Used to copy the cover, trace the cover.
Oh, sure.
Remember when you trace the cover?
Yeah, and also
used to draw, that was how I could draw a gravestone.
Absolutely.
Other things you'd do, you'd make them third dimensional by drawing gravestones, like copying that. But then I kind of stepped off the train as well, after Live After Death.
Yeah.
Summer in Time didn't really do it for me.
No.
Fear of the Dark.
Sure.
I kind of stepped back in a little bit for Fear of the Dark. So.
But also, I mean, Live After Death, which is this tour, for me, it's probably also one of their greatest album covers. Live After Death.
Absolutely.
Because you fold it open, it's just like, it's... Well,
that had all the little intricate bits, the people on the gravestone.
Yeah, absolutely. And you were always looking for Derek Riggs' signature.
Yeah.
Because that was always hidden. It's kind of like, Where's Waldo?
Yeah, I remember that one
everywhere. So, but I love that album cover. It's so great. It's so great.
Klassiker under lup. Behind the vinyl på My Rock.
let's talk a little bit about 2 minutes to midnight. I'm going to throw this over to you.
Let's do like this. Yep. Let's play the song and then we talk about it.
We already did.
Yeah. I'm just testing you.
All right. But before we play another song, most famous Iron Maiden song, Number of the Beast, followed by 2 minutes to midnight.
I think Run to the Hills is way up there as well.
You think that's more?
Yeah, I think so. I think that because if you just going by when you're listening to the radio, if there's a Maiden song coming, is Run to the Hills.
Yeah,
that's a real well-known song.
Am I the only one that puts Brave New World up on my top albums by a Maiden?
You're the only one.
I like Saint Anger by Metallica.
Oh yeah, okay.
That says it all.
Apparently,
no, Brave New World is actually a really good record.
I love Blood Brothers.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah.
And I love the Wicker Man is amazing song.
Yeah.
But maybe that is because I came into the whole like Maiden circus way later than everyone else.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed. Because those two albums that Bruce didn't do,
yeah,
you know, let's just not talk about them. For me, they just,
yeah,
it wasn't Maiden for me.
Yeah,
but when Brave New World came, I completely loved it.
Right. Yeah.
I think probably the world needed Bruce Dickinson to depart.
Iron
Maiden for that return. You know, that return. If they continued. You know, sometimes you need to take away that element. Yeah, split up the band a little bit.
Sure.
But then when they come back, the world realizes and appreciates just the kind of band they had.
One thing I must add here with that thing is that one thing that amazes me about Maiden is that the last tour that Bruce did, they played Ullevi in Gothenburg. Or if they played stuff, but they played like some kind of arena in Sweden.
Okay. Oh, you mean before he left, or
yeah, on the last tour he did.
They played. Was it Friends? Or was it Tele?
No, no, no. Before he before Bruce left.
Oh, before Bruce left. Okay.
Yeah, like in an.
Well, which tour was the last one he did? Was
that no. With Jake is talking about before he departed, before he left in the 90s.
Yeah. Which was his last tour? Which was the last time? Was that
I don't remember. But anyway,
No Prayer for the Dying. Is that the last?
What I'm coming to here is that they were big.
Oh sure, yeah.
And then they come back.
They were big in Sweden.
Yeah, they were big in Sweden. Yeah,
yeah.
But then they come and play on the new album, and on or if it was on the X Factor.
Yeah.
They played like. A place called Trädgårdsföreningen, which isn't there anymore. The capacity was like 700.
Yeah.
And it amazes me how a band that gigantic, you know, just swallows their pride and go down there.
Yeah.
The 2 years later, Bruce comes back and it's Ullevi again.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you know, that is like that's strong.
Same with that's interesting. Same with Judas Priest, because Judas Priest, I mean, they were a big band when pretty much, you know, and they were still working when Rob Halford left. And right after he left, same thing happened to them. When they played here, they played in small places, that took about, you know, I don't know, around 600 or 700 people.
Yeah.
And then he comes back and it's, you know, it's they're playing arenas again. Yeah. And then you have other bands where it worked, like Bon Scott and Brian Johnson, David Lee Roth, Sammy Hagar,
absolutely,
where they just kind of continued and it became even bigger in a way.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But it's cool to go down from this gigantic productions with, you know, 54 trailers.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And you know, share and go to like sharing the tour bus with the opener. You know, like, can we play your drum kit, Nico?
Yeah. Yeah, whatever.
So it was a 700 cap, didn't you
say?
Yeah. I think so, yeah.
And it wasn't even full. The same year, Bruce Dickinson played Valand, which was like 300 capacity.
Oh, right, yeah.
Jesus. Well, see, the first time I saw them was with Blaze Bayley. And that was at Brixton Academy. Yeah.
Right.
Maybe in 97 or something like that. That was the first time I saw Maiden. And I'd seen Bruce Dickinson. I'd worked a show when I was working at Rock City. I'd worked a Bruce Dickinson show.
Right. What's the capacity at Brixton? It's not that
big. 5,000?
It is that big?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. But still.
But it wasn't full.
No, all right. Okay.
I remember it wasn't full.
Yeah.
And then they went on a couple of years later to headline Donington.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Never bought the Blaze Bayley albums. I never listened to them.
the funny thing
Maiden by that point was so irrelevant to me, I wasn't interested.
The funny thing with Blaze Bayley is that he tours and plays Maiden songs that he never recorded.
Yeah.
That's the funniest thing. My snooze is down there at your place.
I don't know how it ended up there.
And that's what we're going to play a song.
Oh,
Behind the Vinyl, My Rock.
We talked a little bit earlier. To you, every song is a killer on this record.
More or less. I mean, like, this song is probably one of the songs that I haven't, you know, really put in my memory bank, so to say. It's not one of the songs that I would just, you know, sing it, and, you know, yeah. Most of the other songs I can do that with, but
I think this is a Dickinson song.
I never really understood the way how they write their songs, because Steve Harris is obviously behind most of the songs in one way or the other. But then you have, like, the Flesh of the Blade, where Dickinson is the only songwriter on.
Yeah.
But you could still hear, like, the Steve Harris bass line plays, you know, like, and for me, that sounds like he is co-writer of the song.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe it's just a way for them to, you know, divide the rights a little bit. I don't know, but it's different in every band.
Yeah, and Dickinson wrote Power Slave as well.
Yeah, the songwriting is a little bit all over the place here, to be honest. Like, Dickinson wrote Power Slave. Harris wrote Rome of the Ancient Mariner, which I actually would have thought Dickinson would have written.
Yeah.
I would think that it would be a Steve Harris song. So we're all divided there. Yeah.
2 Minutes to Midnight. You know, again, I would have thought Harris would have written that, but
yeah, it's Smith and Dickinson.
Smith and Dickinson.
Yeah.
And then Ace is High, obviously, Steve Harris by himself. So it's a little bit all over the place.
But it's interesting with 2 Minutes to Midnight that it's 6 minutes long.
Yeah.
I didn't know this until I actually looked into the papers.
No.
And it's a song that doesn't feel like it's a 6 minute song. For me, in my head, when I'm thinking about it's an original 3:30 song.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Now that's
all very long songs.
So, first time you saw Maiden?
First time I saw Maiden must have been at Ullervi 2000. It was before they released... It must have been on the Brave New World tour.
Right.
I think that was the first time. But I had the shittiest places in the whole venue. You know, like, if you have the stage in one corner, I was sitting in the corner at the far end. So the sound, like, the delay system was not even facing that direction. So, you know, you only got, like, some kind of speakers that was, like, hitting walls.
Right, yeah.
So it sounded really, really bad. I remember I put more energy into go buying beers than actually, because it was completely sold out. We couldn't get any better spaces. Next time I saw them was a couple of years later on the...
Somewhere in Time?
No, the Final Frontier tour.
Oh, right, yeah.
And I saw them at Wacken.
Oh, okay.
And that annoyed the hell out of me. We were talking about it a little bit before. Yeah. They played the whole album from start.
Yes,
That album is like 72 minutes.
I know.
And the audience, they just released it like a week before. Yeah. So no one knew the songs.
Yeah.
And everyone was just standing there like...
Yeah. I remember, I keep forgetting that, but I saw them at Sonisphere when it was pouring down here in Stockholm with Motley Crue and Iggy Pop.
Iggy Pop, Motley Crue.
Warrior Soul played there.
Anthrax played there.
Oh, Anthrax played there?
Yeah.
I don't even remember. I just remember it was pouring down.
Absolutely.
I was so wet, so muddy when I got home.
It was the most rain I've ever encountered in my life, I think. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. So let's go back to that Wacken. So you saw him at Wacken.
Yes.
In front of how many people?
80 maybe. 80,
and you've stood on that stage.
The day after, I was standing on the same stage.
At that same time.
Around the same time, yeah.
Yeah, like in a close to headlining slot.
Yeah, I was playing with, it was the biggest show Camelot ever put on, and I was up there on stage doing backup vocals.
Great.
It was one of the last shows that Roy Kahn did. And it was really, really funny. But it was weird because that was my biggest show that I've ever done as a singer. And it was so many people that it could have just been hay. Because like I couldn't see anything. It was just so much people.
Huh. So we talked a little bit about that today. So you can definitely, you can tell the difference when you're up there between those shows. You know, some people say they don't care whether it's 80,000 or 80 people, but you can feel the difference.
Absolutely. I mean, like when you're playing in front, like obviously at that show, you know, I was standing a little bit in the back, you know, on a podium standing still, and the audience didn't care about what I was doing with my hands. But with Amaranth, we played shows in front of like 50,000 people. Yeah. And, you know, it's a powerful feeling when you're playing in front of that audience, you know, like, let me see your hands, and you see 100,000 hands.
That's what my mother called mass hysteria.
Yeah, and that is cool.
Right.
And that you can't get in a on a club gig.
Right.
But on a club gig, you can get a personal connection to the audience. You can laugh. You can, you know, make jokes. On a big stage, your jokes is just like...
Yeah. Interesting.
Huh. Very cool. Okay, let's play the title track of the album, Pal's Life. Which is a little bit of an underrated track, I think.
I like it.
Yeah
often, I love it.
Often doesn't get the credit. It kind of gets hidden behind Aces High or 2 Minutes of Midnight or something like that.
Thank you. Behind the Vinyl.
Behind the Vinyl. Med Darren Edwards og Niklas Müller. My Rock.
Thus brings us full circle in regards to this album.
Yeah.
The final track, which we'll play after this little monologue that we have now, Rome and the Ancient Mariner. So this is the longest song they had played up until their most recent record, where they recorded that that behemoth on the Book of Souls, which I can't remember what it was called, Empire of the Clouds.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But
that one's longer?
That one's longer.
Jesus
absolutely.
Christ.
Yeah.
That goes song 18, is an entire 18 album.
18 minutes.
18 minutes?
Yeah.
I wonder if I've heard that one.
Why do you even do songs that is that long?
Yeah, I get that. I always, since I'm not a musician myself, you tend to ask like artists when they have those long songs. Is that just because you kept going and going and going, didn't know where to end, or
yeah, couldn't find the end?
Exactly. Well, what's the story? If you
just to be devil's advocate, like you talked about, 6 minutes for 2 minutes to midnight.
Yeah,
went for 6 minutes, but feels like a three.
Oh sure, yeah. Yeah.
Bass is high. Number of the beast. They feel like 3 minute songs.
Yeah, yeah.
All these Run to the Hills, Wrathchild. All feel like kind of those 3 minute. But Rime of the Ancient Mariner is Bruce Dickinson and Dave Murray both refer to it as their favorite Iron Maiden song.
Oh,
yeah.
And I've been saying in interviews lately, when I've been doing interviews for our upcoming album, that I like to write songs that is around 3-4 minutes, because like I think that's what people want to hear. And I always said that look at Maiden, they would never play Rime on the Ancient Mariner live, right?
Yeah.
But now today I learned something new, and I now know that they used to play it live.
Right.
So I've never seen them performing it live though. So
didn't they play on this last tour?
I didn't see them on the last tour.
Last tour was the greatest tour I've ever seen by Iron Maiden.
I saw them at Sweden Rock.
Right,
But I had my daughter down there, so we had to go. Yeah, we had to. My daughter was at my grandpa or her grandparents' place, and we had to go pick her up.
Right.
So we were checking the Maiden show.
Oh, okay.
Then we left.
Right. No, I have to agree. I saw them in Stockholm, and I saw them at Sweden Rock, and I have to agree that it was
probably the best.
Especially one in Stockholm was really a really good show, a great stage show.
Yep.
Great selection of songs. He sounded great.
He sounded amazing.
Yeah.
Band played awesome.
Yeah. That was so interesting as well, because after that show in Stockholm, I also read reviews where it said, he couldn't really hit the high notes and blah, blah, blah. I never felt that in any way. I would remember standing there thinking, he really sounds great.
Yeah, yeah.
So
it must be a little, I don't know whether it's disheartening or what, when you read a show. To me, it doesn't, I don't care.
No.
If I see a review like the Maiden show, how can you give this? Actually, I think I read it in one of the newspapers. It got like a 3 out of 5.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was thinking that was the closest thing to a 5 out of 5 show.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you can't judge an Iron Maiden show from a Pink or Beyonce or whatever.
No.
You need to judge it from an Iron Maiden show and what it is to the public. And
just the Spitfire was 5 out of 5, for God's sake.
There you go.
Yeah.
And I'd say that, I mean, like, I'm pretty young. And I've been singing a lot and doing a lot of shows, but I could never pull off what Bruce is doing on stage.
Mm.
And he's like 30 years older than I am.
Yeah, yeah.
And if I can do it now, I will certainly never be able to do that in 30 years.
Right.
And he's running a half a marathon on stage and still hits most of the high notes with no breath. So I'd say that it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, because that was the thing as well. He never sounds out of breath.
No.
Like some other singers do.
Yeah.
And like me when I walk over to get my tea on a 13-meter stage.
he's always sounded good. Bruce Dickinson has always sounded good, but now he's sounding better than ever.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's a guy who's fought cancer and won.
Yes.
Yeah, in his throat.
His throat. Yeah. Which is that ever a scary thing for you?
getting cancer.
Not getting cancer, but your throat, the protecting your throat.
Absolutely. I've had so much problem with my throat throughout the years.
Yeah.
And, you know, you always assuming the worst and you become the Google doctor expert. And, you know, I think I've had cancer in my throat pretty many times, it's your instrument. Because, like, if a guitar player on tour gets the cold or, you know, gets the flu or whatever, he can still sits on a fucking chair and play the songs.
Yeah.
But, you know, if anything happens to me, you might have to cancel.
Mm. Absolutely, yeah.
And that annoys the hell out of me.
Sure.
So on tour, Joachim Kons in Hammerfall said that once, that why the hell did I become a singer? Because, like, I'm alone in my hotel room while the other guys are out partying.
Yeah.
And that's the whole truth, because we need to take care of our instrument and, you know, not overdo it, not talk too much during the day, and, you know, keep hydrated, and, you know, not go out in the cold, go in the heat, stuff like that. You have to think a lot about that, because, like, it strains your vocal cords, and after a couple of days, gone.
We'll be right back.
Det her er Behind the Vinyl på My Rock.
Syrah.
Yeah.
New record.
New record coming out 15th of November.
Absolutely. Excited?
Really. I'm really excited for the tour that comes up. It was a long time ago that we did our like 5-week tour in a row. Yeah. And first time that we play a lot of these places on the tour. We've only done festivals out in Europe. So I think we do like 8 shows in Germany and 8 shows in the UK and, you know, cover new territories, which is really, really good, I think.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah. Lovely. So how do you find life on the road, you know? And again, with your voice as well, it works for you, the two of us?
Since I stopped drinking on tour, it works pretty well. back in the days when I was drinking, I don't think that it had much to do with the drinking, but with the drinking, it comes loud noises.
Sure. Yeah.
It comes loud volumes. You know, yeah. You go to a party and you strain your voice.
Yeah. Yeah.
And all of a sudden in the morning, you have no voice.
Mm.
And so... You know, getting enough sleep and, you know, try not to talk when there's loud music around.
Right.
That helps a lot.
Yeah.
But touring works. Obviously, nowadays, it's a different situation when you've got kids.
Yeah.
You know, you miss them like crazy. But I mean, like, it's my job. I have to do that. There's a lot of people depending on me that I should come to the shows. I can't just, you know, go for paternity leave and on, you know, miss a couple of shows because I'm going home.
Yeah.
So you know, I have to take that time back when I get home from touring. But I love life on the road. I would probably never be able to leave that completely. I would never be able to, you know, say, now I stop with music and I will never do that again.
Yeah.
Because I love it too much.
Mm. Love it. Great.
Yeah.
Nicholas?
Me? I'm not a touring guy.
Life in the school.
I wouldn't survive.
Life in the school.
Life in school is kind of like being on a tour, right? Yeah. It's the same thing.
It's the same red door you meet every morning.
It is. It is. So true. So true.
Alrighty, let's go into Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner. Good luck with the new album.
Thank you, and thanks for having me.
Thank you. Yep. Pleasure.
Coming out on November 15th. Everyone go check it out.
Yep.
Battle From Within. Single is out now.
Single is out now. Yep. Yes, exactly. Check that out as well.
Check that out. Check it out on YouTube.
Yep.
Killer video.
Yep.
Video
Thank
looks
you.
Great.
Thank you. It's not me. It was not us. It was the fans that made the video look so great.
Right. Yeah, that's really... How did you get hold of those guys to do that?
I sent out the message on social media and the response was overwhelming. 400 replies, and you have to watch it. It's amazing.
Great. And we wish you the absolute best with that.
Hell yeah.
Thank you very much. And it was really fun to be a part of this.
And we'll do it again. Next time you're in town,
hell yeah.
Come by and we'll do one of the Halloween records.
Woo!
It's something we've been putting off.
Yes.
Alrighty, here's Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner, and we'll see everyone next week.
Yes.
sigh nor groan. With heavy thump, a lifeless lump, they drop down one by one. Thank you.
Vend pladen, og sidste nummer er spillet, så er Behind the Vinyl slut. Tough luck. Darren og Niklas er tilbage næste søndag kl. 16 med endnu et klassisk album. Og indtil da kan du fange denne og alle de forrige episoder som podcast på radioplay.dk/myrock. Adios.